Morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Lamed Beis. We're starting the new parak today, fourth parak of Masechta Sanhedrin. This parak is kind of like a bridge between the first and second half of the Masechtas. First half of the Masechta, although really it's not true about the entire first half of the Masechta. It's really more true about the third parak of Sanhedrin, which we just completed, and that is that deals with Dine Mamonos. It deals with civil law, and basically the entire process, the judicial process of adjudicating civil law. So that's what we've been covering over the last parak. Second parak had to do with Melech and Kohen Gadol. First parak kind of like just laid the ground rules of, here's how you put a court together. But in other words, if we can try to put a thematic attachment to the first half of the Masechta, that had to do with civil law. And now what the Masechta is going to do is that the Masechta is going to go now into Dinei Nefashos. It's going to go into capital cases. But our Mishnah kind of like bridges those two. And the Mishnah basically here is going to highlight the difference between Dinei Mamonos, monetary law, civil law, and Dinei Nefashos and capital cases. And there are a number of very basic differences that exist between the two, and the Mishnah over here is highlighting the many differences that exist between Dinei Mamonos and Dinei Nefashos. So let's go. So first, before we talk about the differences, let's talk about where they are the same. So Echad Dinei Mamonos veEchad Dinei Nefashos beJewish veChakir sheNemar Mishpat Echad Yelachem. Okay. So by Dinei Mamonos and Dinei Nefashos, so we have one commonality between them, and that is that we have to do Drisha V'Chakira. So we said that, we just talked about this yesterday, but let's say it again. Drisha V'Chakira. We'll start with Chakira. Chakira is basically the most basic of questions that we're examining the witnesses with. When did it happen? Where did it happen? Most basic information necessary in order to start off with establishing a case. So Drisha are then the both important and not so important questions that we're asking the witnesses as well. When I say important, I mean important to the case itself. How much money was lent? What did the money look like? How many coins were handed from one to another? And then the not so critical questions, but still we're going to ask the Edom anyway, because we want to see if the Edom were actually there and saw it. Yeah, what color shirt was he wearing? Right, so these are what's called Drisha and Chakiras. Now, Drisha and Chakiras are required, and it's a din da araisa. Right, the Rashi quotes the pasuk. The pasuk says v'darash v'chakarta, that you have to be darish, you have to ask, and you have to be choker, and you have to investigate. So it's a pasuk minatara, it's a din minatara to do Drisha v'chakira, and it's going to be true both by monetary law and by capital crimes. This is the point of commonality that exists between the two. It's of course interesting, and this is going to be our first discussion we're going to see when we get to the Gemara a little bit later this morning, and that is that by Dinei Mamonos, we don't need Drisha v'chakira, meaning we waive Drisha v'chakira. What happened? Meaning the Mishnah here says that we do need it by Dinei Mamonos, and then practically speaking, we don't need it by Mamonos. And what exactly happened? And when we get to the Gemara, that's the discussion that's coming up a little bit later on. But in the meantime, however, let's continue. Ma bein dinei mamonos v'dinei nefashos. Okay, and so now, what's the difference between dinei mamonos and dinei nefashos? And now we're highlighting the differences. Okay, before we go through the Mishnah, the details in the Mishnah, let's just speak a little bit conceptually about one of the most fundamental differences that exists between a civil case and a case of dinei nefashos. And that is, let's consider. Let's start with a capital case because it's easier. We're really looking if the person is in fact violating the law or not violating the law. Meaning when we're talking about dinei nefashos, and really it's when I say dinei nefashos, it's capital crime. It's also corporal. It's a corporal punishment as well. Meaning the person's subject to makos. So really, what we're looking for is either guilt or innocence. That's really what we're trying to determine in the course of dinei nefashos. The guy in the wrong or the guy not in the wrong. By Dinei Mamonos, obviously, it's really fundamentally, principally, it's different. Because by Dinei Mamonos, what's happening over here? We have litigation between two people. Two people are litigating a question of money. Now, yes, it's true, it could be a right and a wrong. Right? Someone stole from somebody. Okay. That could be it could be a right and wrong. And it could also just simply be two perspectives of a situation. How many times do people get involved in litigation when it comes to some sort of business dealing? And, you know, sometimes it could just simply be that there were just two different perspectives of how the communication went, what exactly the details were. So to say right and wrong when it comes to monetary cases, sometimes it's true, but often is a case where it's not he's guilty, he's innocent. right? Those words don't even apply when it comes to monetary cases. Just simply based on the situation, like whose side seems to be more in favor of being awarded the money. So there really is just an entirely different conceptual construct of a din mamlos as opposed to din nefashos. Fine. And by the way, I think what I just said is what Tosos, the first Tosos, is driving at. Okay, you can see the Tosos. You can it may in fact be the case. But okay, now that we've said it just in the most general terms, let's see the Mishnah inside. So ma bein din mamlos din nefashos. So what are the differences? So there are a number of them. Let's go. Number one, din mamlos b'shosh b'din nefashos b'asher mishlosha. How many judges do we need need to try the case? In a monetary case, it's 3. In a capital case, it's 23. We already said this in the first parak, but again, in our parak, we're highlighting differences. So even though we didn't learn anything new, but this is one of the differences. Next, din mamlos pochs. In a civil case, so the argument can start either for or against. It's really the option of the judges during deliberation. If they want to argue on behalf of somebody or against somebody. But when it comes to a capital case, so ain poskan lechova, meaning that there's going to be deliberation, there's going to be back and forth. We need to start with an argument of acquittal. That should be a starting point. Meaning, obviously, on the deliberation, we're going to go back and forth. Some are going to argue for acquittal, some are going to argue for conviction. But the starting place has to be acquittal. It cannot be a conviction. Okay, and the Gemara is going to explain how we know this. Meaning, the Mishnah over here does not give us any sources for any of these halachas, and that's the style of the Mishnah. That's the way the Mishnah always functions. Right now I'm just cataloging Mishnahs in my head. Sometimes the Mishnah gives us drushas, but rarely is the case. So this the Mishnah over here is just spitfiring point after point, and the Gemara is going to go and delve deeper into all these points. Next, dina mamnos matin api echad bein l'tzchus bein l'chova, v'dina nefashos matin api echad l'tzchus v'api shtayim l'chova. Next point of the Mishnah. When it comes to a civil case, so it's going to be the Beis Din's ruling could be based on a majority and just even a one judge majority. Now, just between you and I, if the case is going to be tried in front of three judges, it's your options in terms of conclusions is that either it's going to be unanimous court, or it's going to be a one person. It's going to be a one person majority because that's how three works, two and one. So there really aren't that many options. But we did see earlier in the Masech that even in a monetary case, it could end up being that we're going to end up with more than three judges. But either way, the point's still the same. In other words, you only need one person majority in order to go in either direction. But when it comes to capital cases, we already said this on day one of the Masechta. We're saying it now again in the Mishnah, highlighting differences. But when it comes to a capital case, you need for conviction a majority of two. Now, we already made this point. I'll just make it again. In a court made up of 23, a majority of two is impossible to arrive at. Because when you have 23, so and you need a majority of two, the numbers simply don't work out. Meaning it's going to be 10 and 13 to get a majority. Your two options are going to be either 11 and 12 or 10 and 13. So you're not going to get a majority of two. The Gemara already dealt with that earlier. The Gemara constructed a scenario in which we could get a majority of two. But again, we're just really now speaking in the abstract. You can't convict with just a majority of one when it comes to a capital case. Next, when it comes to civil case, if let's say Beis Din came to a conclusion, a particular judge voted in a certain direction, and then he would like to recast a vote. So by Dina Mamanos, he has every right to do so, and it can go in either direction. However, by Dina Nefashos, if we have ruled in favor of conviction, so then you can, if one of the judges would like to resubmit a vote, he may do so, and even though it's going to turn and from a conviction to an acquittal. But you can't go in the other direction by capital cases. By capital cases, if you voted acquittal, that is your vote, and that will constantly and consistently be your vote in this particular case, and you cannot reverse your vote of acquittal. When it comes to civil case, so anyone can argue in any direction. When we say anyone, who do we mean anyone? Meaning we're talking obviously about the judges, but we're also talking about the Talmidim as well. Meaning, as we're going to see later in the Masechta, so you had basically interns in the courtroom. Talmidim, they were students. And they basically were sitting and gaining experience after experience, sitting in the courtroom, watching the judges deliberate, watching how each case goes. And so, every now and then, you have a student who's been there for a while, so he gets a good sense of, you know, how the judicial process works. And he's going to, every now and then, he's going to pipe up, and he has every right to do so, in terms of the deliberation. The Mishnah is telling us that, when it comes to a civil case, he can pipe up, and he could say whatever argument he'd like to say, whether it's for or against a particular litigant. But in the case of nefashos, so yes, the student can pipe up and talk, but the only thing the student can argue is for an acquittal. A student cannot make an argument during deliberation for a conviction. When it comes to a civil case, during deliberation, if you would like to change your argument during deliberation, you can do it. And you can change your argument in any direction. However, in a capital case, during deliberation, I'm being very specific over here in the way I'm describing it. In a capital case, during deliberation, if you started arguing for an acquittal, you must maintain that position. If you started arguing for conviction, you don't have to maintain that position. You could side, you could flip your argument over to acquittal. Now, we're not talking about the vote right now. We're just talking about deliberation. Meaning, if let's say during deliberation you opted to argue acquittal, and you argued acquittal throughout the entire deliberation, by the end of deliberation you thought to yourself, look, I made a valiant effort, I argued acquittal, but I don't really think he's innocent. I think he's guilty. So Rashi points out over here, you can vote at the end for a conviction, but it just in terms of deliberation, if you start arguing acquittal, you must maintain that argument throughout the deliberation. Next. In a civil case, so the case has to start during the day, but it can be finished at night. But Dina Nefashos has to begin during the day, and it has to end during the day. Again, the Gemara doesn't cite sources for this. We'll talk more in the Gemara in terms of where the source for this is. By a civil case, so it could be finished during the day, meaning the day of the day where it started, and whether or not we're going to find somebody guilty or not guilty doesn't really matter. In a civil case, you can conclude on the same day. Now, in a capital case, if let's say the case started today, and by the end of the day, the judges, you see already that the judges are going to be voting in favor of an acquittal. So you could do the vote today, and that's fine. However, uvayom shel acharav lechova. But let's say the judges kind of like do like a pre-vote, you know, or you know, you basically, you know, based on the arguments and the deliberation, that you know that this is not going, it's not going to go well for the defendant, and basically you see conviction coming. So basically, we're postponing the vote till tomorrow, and we're all going to go sleep on it. And Rashi writes, and I'm reading the Rashi Dibra Maschil, Dina Nefashos Gomer Baba Yom Leschos of Yom Shachar of Lechova. Reading the Rashi, Im Ziku Bayom Rishon Poskin Estino Miyad Baho Lechlo. So if it's an acquittal, so we're, that day we're voting and that's it. Avalim Lo Yach Leschos of Yom Rishon in Poskin Estino Lechova Ela Malinen Esdino. It's a postponement of the. Of the decision, ad lamachar shema yimatze b'laylas chos. One of the judges is going to go to bed that night and not going to be able to sleep, and is going to think about maybe there is an argument for an acquittal, and so we are going to postpone till tomorrow for a perhaps a chance that a one of the judges is going to turn his vote from a conviction to an acquittal.
Isn't that a clue to another side that it's a conviction?
It's more than a clue. Right. In other words, it's more than a clue. Meaning, right. In other words, the defendant himself is going to bed that night knowing that right now it's really looking unfavorable for him. That's correct. The Mishnah now makes the next point, which is it's a logical deduction, and that is that you can't start a capital case on a Friday or an Erev Shabbos, because capital cases are not necessarily going to finish that day. Even if the judges do finish everything, the deliberation, everything, But remember that if they're going to go for a conviction, they must wait for the next day. Well, the next day is Shabbos, the next day is Yom Tov, and we don't judge on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. And again, the Gemara is going to discuss more of that in detail as well. When it comes to civil cases or even cases of halacha, tuma tahara, so the opening argument can be made by the greatest of the judges, meaning that in the courtroom there's going to be basically an understanding of who's on a higher plane, who knows more, who has more experience, right? We call them the gadol, right? The greater of the judges. So in a civil case or in a case of halacha, we could start basically even with the greatest opinion. However, din nefashos matchilim minatzad. But when it comes to a capital case, the one who is the greatest should not be opening up the argument. He should wait till the end to speak his mind. And the reason why, explains Rashi, is because once he gives an opinion, so then all the other judges who do not have the same cognitive ability and the same experience are all going to look at him and say, we're really supposed to give a different opinion? And Rashi points out, it's actually a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk is not beferish, but Rashi min hatzad, second wide line on the Amud, min haktan sham yitzchai v'agadah v'lo yiratzo lechlok al devarav. If a greater dayan gives an opinion, no one's going to want to argue with him. Lo sana al riv, the pasuk says back in Parshas Mishpatim, al devarav shagadol rav, ksiv below yud. Meaning we're darshan the pasuk, don't argue with someone greater than you. Okay. It's interesting, by the way, Rashi says that no one's going to want to argue with him. It certainly sounds like from Rashi that you have the option of arguing with him, but the pasuk, however, seems to indicate that you're not allowed to argue with someone greater than you. Okay. Back to the Mishnah. Who's eligible to be a judge? So in a civil case, anybody, but not in a din nefashos, not a capital case. Cohen Levi Yisrael can judge a capital case. Anyone who's allowed to marry a Cohen. This is basically another way of the Mishnah saying you can't be a convert and judge capital cases. The Gemara is going to say Psukim. The drushes are all coming up. Okay, so in the Mishnah, we basically rattled off numerous differences that exist between Mamonos versus Nefashos. Again, there's no drushes quoted in the Mishnah in terms of why there are differences, but there are many differences that we just went through. However, the Mishnah's opening line had to deal with the commonality between the two. Both by Dina Mamonos and by Dina Nefashos is Risha V'Chakira. When the witnesses come in, so we must ask the witnesses questions. Okay, and again, like I said back in the beginning of this year today, and just to quickly reiterate, to set ourselves up for the Gemara, Chakiras are the most basic questions we're asking the witnesses. When did it happen? Where did it happen? Now, the reason why these are critical questions and are necessary questions is because in order for a witness to be a witness, he has to be eligible for Azama. We, of course, don't want the witnesses to be mazimed. We don't want them to become Edom Zomimim. And we hope they don't lie and conspire to lie. But at least it's almost as if the Torah is basically, let's keep the witnesses honest. Let's keep them on the straight and narrow. And how we do that? Because if they're eligible for Hazama, that means then that under certain circumstances, and we're going to go through the details in the first parak of Makos, under certain circumstances, if they're caught lying, so we're going to do to them exactly what they wanted to do to the defendant. The din of Hazama. In order to be eligible for Hazama, we have to establish time and place. Because the second set of witnesses said, there's no way you were there at the time, you were with us at the time. Well, that statement can only be verified if we establish time and place. Okay. What we would call in our system an alibi. Okay. So these are chakiras, and the Mishnah taught us that when it comes to Dinei Mamonos and it comes to Dinei Nefashos, so they both need Drisha v'chakira. The Gemara is going to basically be bothered by a really simple question. We've now done a lot of Gemaras regarding Dinei Mamonos. Doesn't seem like we need Drisha v'chakira. In fact, just in yesterday's daf, Rav Yehuda pointed out that if, let's say, the witnesses cross each other in examination by Dinei Mamonos, can let it slide. But really, we're going to go even one step further in today's daf, in that when it comes to Dinei Mamonos, we don't even need chakiras. Meaning we don't even need to establish when and where. Now, how do I know that? How do we all know that? So we're going to see that together right now. But that by Dina Mamonos, we don't even need to establish time and place. Dina Mamonos, the Gemara starts right here. Dina Mamonos, mi be'in and drisha v'chakir v'reminu. Do I really need Drisha V'chakir when it comes to Dinei Mamros? It doesn't seem to be the case. Let's say that we have now a loan document that is dated on the first day of Nisan of the seventh year. Okay, we all know during the Shemitah year, so what happens is that you're not allowed to work the land during the Shemitah year, but we're not talking about that aspect of Shemitah, we're talking about the aspect of cancellation of loans. We're going to say it really simple, and it's really the halacha. There is one sheet amongst the Rishonim that cancellation occurs in the beginning of the Shemitah year. That's the Rush. But let's not say that right now. Let's keep it really simple. Let's assume the cancellation of loans occurs at the end of the Shemitah year. So, Rosh Hashanah of the first year of the Shemitah cycle, so all loans have just been canceled. Okay. It's going to be a little bit strange that I'm going to lend money halfway through the Shemitah year, knowing that 6 months from now, the loan is going to be canceled. Now, of course, yes, there's an institution called Prosbul. We all are familiar with it. And there is a way of circumventing the cancellation of the loan. We're all aware of that. But just ignore Prosbul for just a moment. And let's just think about it in the abstract. If I'm lending money on the first day of Nisan of the Shemitah year, this loan life is only 6 months and that's it. The loan will not exist after 6 months. Chances of me lending money at that point in time, not great. But look, Torah says, don't worry. Do it. Just lend the money. He needs it. You lend it. Either he'll pay you back or the loan will be canceled. Right? But still, though, human nature is such that a person's not necessarily going to lend money then. But if he does... Now, Now, on the loan document, we have time and place. They're written in the loan document. So, and then another set of witnesses look at the loan document and see who signed on the loan document. And they said, that can't be. Meaning the loan document said that the loan occurred here and a loan occurred on this date. But we were with that person on that date in a different location. There's no way that these people could have signed that loan document. And now they're accusing the signers on the document to be Adam Zomimim. With the classic line of Imanu Aisim Bamakum Ploni, they were with us at the time. What do we say? What we say is very simple. Shtar Kasher, Beid of Cherim. Shtar is still good. The Adam are good. We're all good. What? How can we all be good? This is a classic case of Adam Zomimim. Gemara immediately explains. Because what could very well be the case is that this is a post-dated document. We've discussed this a number of times. At the end of Baba Basra, we discussed this extensively. So it's not recommended, but you're allowed to write a post-dated note. Post-dated note simply means that the loan occurred here, and meanwhile, as far as the note is concerned, the note is going to be either written at a later time or post-dated to a later point in time. But in other words, the date on the note does not necessarily reflect the day that the loan actually occurred. Now, post-dating a note does not hurt the borrower, and it's not going to hurt any buyer. Because remember, with every note, there comes a lien, and that lien allows the lender to go take land that is mortgaged against the note. If we're post-dating the note, no one's going to get hurt except for the lender himself, who's going to lose time in terms of placing a lien on a property. But no buyer's going to get hurt. As opposed to pre-dating a note, which we've discussed already a number of times, pre-dating a note can actually hurt somebody. Financially, meaning let's say that we predate a note, which means that we're dating the note prior to when the loan actually occurred, which means that basically we're creating a fictitious lien on a property by predating a note. So now you have a buyer who buys a property, and now comes the lender and takes the property based on a default of the loan, and using the date on the document as means of taking the land, and meanwhile there was no lien because the loan hasn't occurred yet. So, predating a note is no good. Post-dating a note, not recommended, but it's fine. You could do so. And so basically now, once we know that there's an option to post-dating a note, so then there's no longer a din ha'zama when it comes to a loan document. Because I'm looking at the date of the note, but that doesn't necessarily reflect when the loan actually occurred. So what do we do with ha'zama when it comes to a loan document? We throw it out the window. I'll tell you the problem. The Gemara says the problem. So you got to pick or choose. Either way, there's a requirement of Drisha V'Chakira. Now, if there's a requirement of Drisha V'Chakira, there should be no flexibility whatsoever with the date. The date on the note can and only can represent the actual day in which the loan occurred. There could be no room for post-dating, pre-dating, nothing. Or we'll allow for post-dating, but once we allow for post-dating, then there's no longer Drisha V'Chakira. So you got to choose. Either you subscribe to Drisha V'Chakira when it comes to monetary law, which doesn't allow for post-dating, or you allow for post-dating, which doesn't allow for Drisha V'Chakira, and we are now at an impasse. Our Mishnah says that for Dina Mamanos, we do require Drisha V'Chakira. The Braisa says that for writing up loan documents, we allow for post-dating, which precludes Drisha V'Chakira. Which one is it? I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Right. In other words, right. Just do away with the Chir Kira and not with the Drisha. But our Mishnah tells us that we don't. Meaning, our Mishnah says we need to do both. So, practically speaking, we're not going to do it. But the question, of course, is why not? The Mishnah says we need to do it. It's a question on our Mishnah. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to get a little bit invested in this question, in that this next part of the Gemara is a little bit detail oriented, which that's how Gemara works. But the question as it is right now is outstanding, meaning at this point in time it demands an answer. But what the Gemara is going to do right now is just get a little bit bothered by how can we ask the question from a Braisa when meanwhile we could have asked the question from the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Shemitah, the Mishnah in Shviyas, I should say, that we've seen already a number of times. Ask the question from the Mishnah. And parenthetically, Rashi points out, in other words, if we have an option of asking from a Mishnah or a Braisa, of course it's better to ask from a Mishnah. Mishnah is more authoritative, it's more accepted. And the Mishnah in Shviyas tells us, pre-dated loan documents are pasul, post-dated loan documents are kosher. Okay, so the Mishnah in Shviyas tells us that we have an allowance for post-dated documents. So again, the question now becomes the same question. The Gemara is just bothered by why did we run to the Braisa, not the Mishnah? Excuse me. The Gemara just reiterates the question. Once we allow for post-dated documents, then therefore there can be no requirement to Drisha V'Chakira. So the Gemara here just simply settles the question of why do we ask the question from the Braisa, not from the Mishnah? Gemara goes on to explain. Okay. Gemara basically answers that the Braisa was better. I'll tell you why the Braisa is better. We're 6 months before the cancellation of a loan. It's already strange that somebody's running a loan document on the first day of Nisan of a Shemitah year. It's already strange. You really think he's going to post-date that note? Meaning, and further shrink the time between the loan and when he's able to collect the loan. That's even stranger. So here, you can even make a better argument that this note is probably not post-dated. Already, the shelf life of this loan is already only 6 months. And he's going to shrink that even more. But the Braisa tells us it's within the realm of possibility. So even when there's an argument that you can make that the loan is not post-dated, we're still going to make the argument that the note's post-dated, and that's why the Braisa was better than the Mishnah. Okay, fine. Mikom akom kasha. But the Gemara says, okay, now the question can be asked from the Mishnah, the question can be asked from the Braisa, however you want to ask the question, it's an outstanding question, it demands an answer. So let's reset the question one more time, and let's give an answer. Question. Our Mishnah says that there is one area of commonality between Dina Mamanos and Dina Nefashos, and that is a requirement to Drisha V'Chakira. When the witnesses come in, we have to ask them time and place. When did the loan occur? Where did the loan occur? And the reason why is so that now these witnesses are eligible for Hazama, which is a critical component of being an aide. Meanwhile, the Mishnah and the Braisa both say that when it comes to a loan document, it can be post-dated. It can be post-dated. In fact, because of that possibility, even if the witnesses are accused of being Adam Zomimim, because the second set say, the Braisa says that with super clear terms, the witnesses are fine. They're okay. They're not going to be subject to Adam Zomimim. And the reason why is because the note can be post-dated. And since the note can be post-dated, the date on the note does not necessarily reflect the day of the actual loan itself. Okay. So, is there a requirement to Drisha V'Chikira, or is there not? The Mishnah says there is. And meanwhile, the Mishnah in Shvius and the Brisa we just learned together clearly state that there's no requirement to Drisha V'Chikira. Okay, so, or just to say it a little bit more precisely, there's certainly no requirement of Chakira, of asking when and where it happened. So, Simen Charpasa, the Gemara gives us the mnemonic to help us commit to memory the answers of the Gemara. The letters here, Ches, Resh, Pei, Shin, represent the names of the Amoraim who give the following answers. Now, it sounds like the four answers coming up, I'm going to be a little bit technical. There really are three answers coming up. The fourth answer you'll see is not really addressing our question. Okay. I'm Rabbi Chanina. Dvar Torah Echad Dina Mamros V'Echad Dina Nefashos B'Jushu V'Chakir Shinemar Mishpat Echad Yelachem. Okay. So Rabbi Chanina's answer is like this. There is a fundamental, and then there is a practical. Fundamentally, I need Jushu V'Chakir for both monetary law and for capital cases. Dvar Torah, both Dina Mamros and Dina Nefashos require Jushu V'Chakir. The Pasuk says Mishpat Echad Yelachem. That there has to be one uniform standard of how to adjudicate. And since the Torah says Mishpat Echad, so therefore once the Torah sets the standard of Drisha V'Chakira, V'Darasha V'Chakarta, and couple that with Mishpat Echad, so therefore, for all cases, both Nefashos and Mamonos, we need Drisha V'Chakira. And now what happened? Umatam Amr Dina Mamonos Lobina Drisha V'Chakira. And then what the Chachamim did is they deregulated. And Kadesh Lo Tin Al Das Bifnei Lovin. Now I know we already discussed this, but here we're discussing it again because this is answer number one. The Chachamim deregulated and took away the requirement of Drisha V'Chakira in order to make it easier for lenders. As we've said time and again, this is such a constant theme throughout Seder Nezikin. The Chachamim wanted to incentivize lenders to lend money. It makes for a healthy economy, and I say that all the time. I think it's even simpler than that, just more than it just makes for a healthy economy. Meaning, people who are borrowing need money, and we want to make this an avenue for them, that they can borrow money. And if we make it harder for lenders to lend, they're not going to want to lend. And remember, we're talking about lending Jew to Jew. There's not going to be interest over here. So already there's no incentive for the lenders to lend other than it's a mitzvah. Right, it's you know, you're helping another person, but and those are obviously higher order goals. But if there is going to be complication in me getting my money back, I know it's a good thing, but you know another time. So what the Chachamim did is that they removed the requirement of Drisha V'Chakira so that it incentivizes lenders to lend money. Elamiata. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true. Tao lo yishamu. So then, shouldn't we give the judges a little bit of a pass? Meaning, let's say the judges make a really dumb mistake in judgment, okay, malpractice. But like, and the Gemara later on is going to be discussing what is considered gross malpractice. But let's say the judges really make a terrible error, or egregious error. And under certain circumstances, the judges themselves are going to be liable to have to pay. The Gemara says, well, wait one second. We've waived Drisha V'Chakira, which in a sense basically means we handcuffed the judges. Meaning we basically said to the judges, look, I know you got a lot of questions you want to ask the witnesses, but don't. In other words, we're telling you not to ask the questions. So basically, it's what the Gemara is bothered by now is it's unfair to the judges. We're going to hamper their ability to investigate the case. And then we're also going to hold them accountable for any mistakes they make. That seems like a little bit, that seems unfair, right? And the Gemara says to that, yeah, it seems a little bit unfair, but again, the larger issue is we want lenders to lend. The Gemara says, Kol Shekein Shetino Dels Bifnei Lovin. The Gemara says, if we give the judges a pass and we're not going to hold them accountable for mistakes they make, for gross errors that they make in judgment, well then lenders for sure not going to lend. Imagine. Beis Din makes a ruling. It was a terrible mistake. We exempt them from having to make any the judges from making any compensation. The lender walks out of court saying, "I'm never lending again," and he's going to tell his friends, "Don't do it, don't lend." Let me tell you what happened with me in court today. And so the Gemara says, if we were to exempt the judges, for sure lenders are not going to lend. And again, the overarching goal of the Chachamim is to incentivize lenders to lend. Okay. So far, what we have now is answer number one to our question. Is there a Jewish v'chakir requirement when it comes to din mamonos? So answer number one, Rabbi Chanina, is yes, there is. But the Chachamim remove the requirement in order to incentivize lending. Answer number
two. What about the judges?
Yeah, right. Meaning, for every action, there's a reaction. Meaning, you're right. You're absolutely right. But again, the overarching goal of incentivizing lending is going to be goal number one. And yeah, in other words, then and it's going to have ramifications. Rav Amar. Second line, Alamed Beis, Alamed Beis. Masisin dahacha bedina knasas ve'idach ba'odas va'avos. Rav says, no, we don't have to make a distinction between Daraisa versus Darabanan. Basically, here's the story. Story is that the Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about two different types of civil cases. Meaning, certain civil cases, hodas va'avos, right, admissions of obligations, lending. So there, there's no Jewish of a chakira. Why? Because a note can be postdated. But if it's kanas, if we're talking about a monetary case, but it's punitive, so there is a requirement of drisha v'chakira, and there is a requirement to establish when and where it happened, and therefore the witnesses involved in such a case could in fact be eligible for adam for hazama. Answer number two. Answer number three of the Gemara. Rav Papa Amar Ida V'Ida Ba'odah V'Hava. Both the Mishnah and the Braisa are talking about lending. One, there is a requirement of Jewish v'chakira, and one, there is no requirement of Jewish v'chakira. Kam b'din meruma, kam b'din shein meruma. And the difference is the following. Rashi explains. Meruma means the deception, from the word ramai. Meaning, let's say a guy walks in, and I'm going to say stereotype, but like, I'm just doing it in order to illustrate an example. Not trying to be offensive, but let's say the guy comes in. His hair is really like slicked back. He's wearing like a really really good suit, and basically the antennas of the judges go up in the air. Like I don't think this guy's on the up and up. Okay, talks fast, thinks fast. So under those circumstances, so the judges now have their discretion, and they can impose drisha v'chakira. Meaning, under normal circumstances, you don't need drisha v'chakira. Meaning, the lender comes in, he's a good guy. Let's assume he's a good guy. We don't need to do drisha v'chakira. Meaning, and again, it goes back to the point of we want to incentivize lending. But if we do have a suspicion that this lender is not on the up and up, so now under those circumstances, based in can and should implement drisha v'chakira. Rashi writes, Meruma, Shebeisim makirin b'tovei hazeh shuhu ramai. Beisim knows that this litigant is just no good. Oh, mivinan tanas ramai b'dvarav. Or maybe they don't know that, but as they hear him talk, like, oh, he sounds suspicious. He doesn't sound straight. So under those circumstances, now Beisim has the option and is recommended that they impose drisha v'chakira, so that now the witnesses/litigant is going to be discovered to be up to no good. Okay, so we have now in the Gemara. I'm sorry, and let me just read a little bit more. Kidurei Shlakish. Kidurei Shlakish. Derei Shlakish. Rami Ksiv. One pasuk says, "Betzedek tishpat amitecha." One pasuk indicates that you have to seek justice in Ksiv, and we have another pasuk that says, "Tzedek tzedek tirdof." Right, you'll be hearing that this Shabbos, right? And you have to double pursue justice. When do I single pursue justice, and when do I double pursue justice? Haketsa kam b'din meruma, kam b'din shein meruma. So if it's a straightforward case, and the guy that comes into court, both litigants are basically good guys who are just, you know, they have litigation. It happens. It happens to good people. So even if both of them are good people, it happens. So fine. So that's a single tzedek. But if the guy that comes in, either we know is shady, or he certainly sounds shady, so tzedek tzedek, the double tzedek. Which means, in the context of our third answer of the Gemara, means that here the Chachamim, the Dayanim now have the ability to impose drisha v'chakira. So basically now, let's just quickly recap. We have a simple question. We have three basic answers. Question, do I need Yushif HaChakir when it comes to monetary law? And it certainly does not sound that way after learning the Braisa and after learning the Mishnah and Shvius that says that, look, the documents can be post-dated. Once a document can be post-dated, there certainly does not seem to be any ability to pin down the witnesses when you see them dating a document on a certain day because it could be post-dated. So, is there a requirement to Yushif HaChakir? Our Mishnah says yes, and the Braisa and the Mishnah Shvius says no. There's no requirement to Yushif HaChakir because we can post-date documents. So, yes or no? So we have three answers in the Gemara. Answer number one, Rabbi Chanina, that's the Ches, is that, no. Let's start like this. Fundamentally, yes, but the Chachamim deregulated and took away the requirement to Yushif HaChakir to incentivize lending. Answer number two, that's Rava, that's the Reish. Rava says that in Dina Mamanos, no requirement to Yushif HaChakir. Dina Knossos, there is a requirement to Yushif HaChakir. Answer number three.
Rabbi Chanina said no.
Rabbi Chanina is saying that the Mishnah is not teaching us a halacha. The Mishnah is teaching us a principle, but then the halacha removed the principle. What Rav is saying is that, no, the Mishnah is actually dealing with a halacha, the halacha of Knessos. And then, finally, the third answer of Rav Papa. Rav Papa says that the Mishnah and the Brice are talking about Mamanos, it's talking about loans, and sometimes, within discretion of Beis Din can impose Drisha V'Chakira. When would that be? When their antennas go up, that this is shady. That person over there is shady. Either they know it, or they hear it as he's talking. Rav Ashi Amar, now this is the fourth answer. Now, as I mentioned already before, it's not really a fourth answer. Rav Ashi Amar Masisin Kedeshanina. Meaning, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, go with any one of the three answers that we just laid down. Meaning, Rav Ashi is saying I'm not going to give a new answer. I like any one of the answers that we gave earlier. But what about the steer that we just raised? Meaning, one pasuk said tzedek, and the other one said tzedek. Cry echel ledin veechel lepshara. Tzedek is coming to tell me that sometimes that when judges judge, so they should just go with the strict letter of the law, and sometimes it's advisable for judges to seek a compromise. Now I know this is also another topic that we already covered earlier in the Masechta on Daf Vav of Sanhedrin. But here now we're actually finding this in the Pesukim themselves. Meaning encrypted in the Pasuk is the idea that there are occasions where the judge should not just follow the strict letter of the law, but seek a compromise. Kidatanya. The Gemara over here quotes a Braisa. Tzedek tzedek echad, ledin ve'echad lepshara. One's talking about strict justice and the other one's talking about compromise. Ketzad. So let's give good examples of both. You have two boats coming, approaching one another, the boats are approaching a strait, and only one boat can pass at a time, and they're headed towards one another. So this is called now common courtesy. Let one boat go first, and then the other boat will go. Upagu ze bezeh. Im ovros shem tovos bezeh achar zeh shem ovros. Now here, it's really simple. If they allow it for turns, so we'll have safe passage for both boats. If both boats are insistent that they're going to go down the strait at the same time, collision, both boats are going to go down. And that's a lot of financial damage. V'chein shnei gemalim shayu olam b'malos beis charon. Another example is that you have camels. Again, they're going down the side of a cliff, narrow passage, and they're heading in. They're heading towards one another. Upagu ze bezeh. Imalu shneim shneim noflim. Bezeh achar zeh shneim olim. So again, if they're both insistent that they're going to try the same pathway at the same time, disaster. If they allow for turns, success. So haketzad. So now, is there something called right away? Yeah, there is. Tuna v'sheinu tuna tidachet sheinu tuna mipnei tuna. If one camel is laden down with a burden and the other camel is not, let the camel with that burden go first. Now the Gemara doesn't say this and Rashi doesn't say this, and so I think, I'm just telling you what I think. You know, tzar bale chayim, meaning we want to be more compassionate to the camel that's laden down. Now that's true regarding camels. I wouldn't say the same thing by boats. So maybe what I'm suggesting is not right, but okay, at least what I'm saying is true by camels. Krova v'she'ena krova. Or let's say one is closer to its destination. Now, I'm not sure if what I'm saying is right over here as well. Meaning Rashi just gives a one-word explanation. Krova li'iro. Closer to its city. I think Rashi here is describing a destination, not a point of departure. But anyway, but krova tidacha, krova mimnei she'ena krova. The one that's closer should go first. I struggle to explain why that should be. You know, I guess maybe it's nicer. In other words, he's closer to his destination. Okay, he's been traveling longer maybe. I don't know. Whatever. In other words, there is this idea of right away. Now let's say there was no compelling reason why one should have gone first over through the strait than the other. And then disaster occurs. And there was a crash of the boats, there was a crash of the camels, and now a lot of financial damage. But who had right away? I don't know. There was no compelling argument one over the other. So basically now the judges are going to, under these circumstances, the judges are recommended not to do din, but to do pshara. Listen, guys, I know there was a lot of financial loss. I'm really sorry. Over here, there's no super compelling reason why I should be awarding one over the other. Let's compromise. Under those circumstances, the judges are recommended to compromise between the two parties. Tanu Rabbanan. We are now, so fine. So basically that ends our discussion, that ends the steer between the Mishnah and the Braisa. We gave three answers. Rav Ashi over here, although the Gemara promotes him as giving a fourth answer, it's not really a fourth answer. In fact, the Gemara says it, meaning Rav Ashi says, you go with any one of the three answers. I'm just giving another shot in the Pasuk Tzedek Tzedek. Tzedek Tzedek, the double language is sometimes din and sometimes pshara. Yeah, the Gemara on Daf Vav had a debate whether or not we want compromise or we don't want compromise, right? If you remember back then. Could be that Gemara over there was discussing where, you know, there is an option for din. In the example the Gemara just gave, meaning it's very clear that, you know, din is not going to really side one over the other. Tana Rabbanan, we are in the middle of Lamed Beis, Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov Halach Acher Beis Din Yafeh. Here we're giving like a noop shot in the pasuk tzedek tzedek, and that is, it's not talking to the judges, it's talking to you and I, the consumer. Meaning that when we go to a court, we should seek the best judges. Acher Rabbi Eliezer Lelud, Acher Rabbi Yochem Zaka Lebrur Chayil. Examples. Now these are historical examples. These examples don't help you and me. Okay, we're not going to be able to head out to Lud to meet Rabbi Eliezer. We're 2,000 years too late. Okay, but you get the basic idea. And why the Gemara here is citing these examples when they're historical and they're not going to help us, right? It's interesting. Tana, now the Gemara here just takes a small moment to give us a small tangent. Kol rechaim beborni, shavua ben, shavua ben. If you hear the millstone being ground up in Borni, that is a sign that we're going to have a Shalom Zachar this Friday night. Rashi explains that it was during a gzera where we didn't want to announce that there was a bris coming up, so therefore we had this like code of grinding the millstone. Or haner beburachayel. And if there's a candle that's being lit in the town of Burachayel, Mishtasham, Mishtasham. So the way Rashi explains the Gemara, that means that there's a bris milah the next day, when the candles are being lit that night. And again, it was during the Shas Gzera, and so therefore we communicated it to each other, but through a through this coded message. Tosus points out, by the way, fourth Tosus on the Amud, that there is a... third Tosfos on the Amud, sorry, that there is a minug to light a candle during a bris milah. So Tosfos says that our Gemara over here is the source of that minug. That doesn't explain. In other words, there obviously is deeper reasons in terms of why that should be, but in terms of historically where that minug comes from, so that comes from our Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Tzedek Tzedek Tzedov Halachar Chachamim Liyeshiva. Once again now, this next brisa is going to do the same thing. The pasuk is speaking to us, the consumer. When we go to a beis din, look for a good beis din. So, acher chacham liyeshiva, acher Rabbi Eliezer, acher Rabbi Yochem Zaka lebrur chayil. So the brayso over here again starts with the same examples. Rabbi Eliezer is out in Lud. Rabbi Yochem and Zaka is out in Brur Chayil. Acher Rabbi Yeshua Pekin, acher Rabbi Gamliel Yavna, acher Rabbi Akiva lebnei Brach, acher Rabbi Masiel leRami, acher Rabbi Chananya ben Chajin leSechni, acher Rabbi Yosel leTzipori, acher Rabbi Yehuda ben Basil leTzivin. Acher Rabbi Yeshua Lagola, Rabbi Yeshua is found out in the exile. And Achar Rebbe Lebe Sha'arim, Rebbe's up in the north. And Achar Chachamim Lelishka Sagazis. Or if possible, go to the Lishka Sagazis. Okay, which, in other words, that's in the, right, the Sanhedrin in the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Dina Mamnos Poschen. Okay, let's do a little bit more for this morning. We are now up to the next halacha of the Mishnah. So far what we've discussed is the first point of the Mishnah, the commonality that exists between Mamnos and Nefashos, and of course the irony in which, even though the Mishnah lists it as the only point of commonality between the two, but as we already dealt with in for a good part of today's daf, it's not true. In practice, Drisha v'chakira are waived for Dina Mamnos, even though our Mishnah says it's not waived. Okay, so again, that's the big question of today. The Gemara gave three answers. We're now moving on to the next point of the Mishnah. Is that what are the difference between Mamnos and Nefashos? So the three judges versus 23 judges, the Gemara has no comment about that because that's just simply a fact. I mean, we already established that in the first parak. And we already gave sources for that in the first parak as well. When it comes to Dina Mamnos, so the way we open up is that we open up with an argument. I'm sorry. By Dina Mamnos, we open up in either direction. Acquittal, conviction. In other words, we can go either way. But in Dina Nefashos, we open up with an acquittal. What exactly does that mean? Heichi Amrinan. Meaning, Rashi. I'm reading the Rashi inside. It's the last narrow line. B'psichas chutz kishakibu edusam shal edim v'darshim v'chakrum abayim lisa v'litain heicha amrinan luhu la'edim. Basically, we're going to say something to the witnesses. Something to the witnesses so that they get a sense of this is a really serious matter. Now, I know it's a capital case, and like, we all kind of know that already. But basically, it is a way to instill some sort of seriousness to the witnesses that this is, you got to be careful about what you say. And obviously, if you're coming in and you're lying, like, don't do it. So, the Gemara makes a couple of suggestions. So, mi yemar kidika amrisu. So, the first suggestion of the Gemara is, well, how do we know what you're telling is the truth? Meaning, already we're casting doubts that we think they're telling the truth. So, amalei ula v'ha chasmina lehu. So, ula says, why would we say that to the witnesses before they even open up their mouth? Aren't we essentially muzzling them? Meaning, we do want the witnesses to come forth, and we do want them to testify. And if before they open up their mouth, we're basically casting aspersion upon them, so basically, isn't that muzzling them? And we don't want to do that. So the Gemara says, "V'lichsimu." So the Gemara says, "I don't know, muzzle them." Milo Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer. Sorry, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliezer Omer. Masina Seidim and Makom Makom Kedishi Shi Yichov Da'atam V'Yachzur Behem. So, you know, there was a practice of Rabbi Shimon ben Eliezer that when he had witnesses, so before the witnesses came to court, so basically, he gave them almost like a stress test. Like here, walk from here to here, walk from here to here. And basically, we'd have the Adam walk around. Basically, you know, try to physically, you know, take them off their game a little bit. A little rope-a-dope, if you will. I don't know how many people like that boxing reference. It was really good. But anyway, So the Gemara says, Midami. So the Gemara says, wait one second. The practice of Rav Shimon ben Eliezer is not the same as what we're suggesting. So, Hasam imelekam mitchi. Meaning, when we're walking the Edom around, like tiring them out a little bit, you know, like trying to take the edge off the witnesses, so to say, to get them to tell the truth, Gemara says, we're not saying anything outright to the witnesses. We're just simply running them around a little bit, tiring them out a little bit, if in fact they're trying to come in and be sharp and conniving. You know, we took the edge off a little bit.
It's like the soda.
Right, exactly. But over here, when the before the witness opens up his mouth, we say to him, "I don't know, you're telling the truth." So at that point in time, we are casting an aspersion directly to the witness himself, and that the Gemara says, "Hacha kadachina lo biyadayim." You're like pushing him off physically with your hands by telling him we don't really believe you. So the Gemara says, it can't be. El Amar Ula, so this is the second suggestion of the Gemara. Basically, before the witnesses give their testimony, so what we say is, you know, anyone here in the room have the ability to be mazim these witnesses. Okay. it's obviously it's still rough, meaning what we're basically doing, but it's not as bad as casting aspersion and doubt on their testimony beforehand. We're just basically reminding them, hey guys, you know, this can, your testimony can lead to hazama. So be careful about what you say. So Amalei Rabbi V'chiposkim b'schutso shozeh Shisho chavaso shozeh. So the Gemara says, well, wait one second. Meaning, in order to create an acquittal for the litigant, so what we're doing is that we're creating a conviction for the witnesses. Gemara says, so that's, meaning, yes, it's going to help the litigant, but at the expense of the witnesses. And the Gemara says, I don't know if that's fair. So the Gemara says, "Umi havi chavas vatan an edim zomim neragim ache gemar din." So the Gemara says, "But technically speaking, it's not true because we know that edim zomimim are only going to be convicted of edim zomimim only if they're caught to be edim zomimim after the conviction has been offered." This is the point we're going to see at the beginning of Makos. But in other words, it's for our purposes right now, it's not technically true. They're not going to be right now at the beginning of their testimony be found as Edom Zomim. So Hachemin and Ilu Shasik Hai Ademig Mardino Maisi Edom Omazim Lu Havilu Chavaso Shosa. The Gemara says, but that doesn't really change our point. Our point still stands. In order to find acquittal for the litigant, we're basically focusing now on a possible conviction of the witnesses. And we don't want to do that. So Ela Amarava Aminan Le Yeshlecha Edom Lahachisham. So the Gemara suggests the following. Here's what we'll do. Before the witnesses, or maybe at the beginning of the witnesses' testimony, we're going to say, can anyone contradict their testimony? So we're not impugning them per se and saying that they're going to be Edom Zomimim. We're just simply saying, can anyone contest what they're saying? Okay. Rav Kahana Amar Midivrechem Nizdake Ploni. Rav Kahana says that what we'll do is the following. The witnesses will give their testimony, and immediately before deliberation, we'll say that based on everything we just heard, can anyone find favor for acquittal of the defendant? Abai v'rava damitavayu amin alei, I lo katat lo didchal. Abai and Rava have a different suggestion, and that is that we say to the litigant, look, if you didn't do it, you got nothing to fear. Rav Ashi says, this is the opening statement of deliberation. Anyone who can find a favorable argument of acquittal should do so now. Tanya Kavasa Dabai V'Rava. The Braisa supports the suggestion of Abai and Rava. And that is that the opening statement of deliberation is a statement to the litigant basically saying, if you didn't do it, you got nothing to worry about. The Braisa says, Rabbi Omer, Im lo shachav isho sach, v'im lo satit, v'gomer, meaning the Pasuk by Sota tells us that the opening remark to the Sota is, look, if you didn't commit adultery, you got nothing to worry about. Mikan, top of Lama Gimel Manalv, Mikan Shaposkin Bedina Nefashos, Tchila Luzchus. So when it's the capital case, so we open up Luzchus. We open up with a favorable comment. Now, exactly how that favorable comment just goes. So the Gemara gave a number of suggestions. Some of the first opening suggestions the Gemara did not like, but the Gemara gave a number of suggestions of what to do in order to open up deliberation favorable towards the defendant in a capital case. Again, in a monetary case, not necessary. Monetary case, you can open up either way. Favor, not favor, doesn't matter. Okay. So far covered the first, not really the first, but the first two differences that exist between Dina Mamnos and Dina Fashos. We continue tomorrow.